Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 80 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Neil Tyra, as usual. And today I have a great guest, Chris Yoko. Chris is the owner of Yoko Co., a web development and full service internet presence company that began as a small consulting shop, which aided organizations in their web design and social media endeavors. But as their team grew, they began to add tactical execution to complement their services, such that now they provide a full service web presence management capability to companies and organizations. They have a tremendous backstory, which I urge you to read about on their website, yokoco.com, yokoco.com. But in any case, I wanted to talk to Chris a little bit about the role of websites for attorneys, for law firms, and how that's changed and is changing, and why it makes sense for us as solo practitioners to be serious about our web presence and our website, and what we can and should do along those lines in order to help grow our business. So I think you'll enjoy this interview with Chris Yoko. Chris Yoko, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I'm delighted that you could take the time to be with us today, Chris. Chris, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I'll do the short version. Basically, I had a career, originally paid my way through college in real estate, but the way I got clients doing that was by playing around with building my own websites. Realized I liked doing that more than real estate, so I ended up parlaying that into a gig with the CBS radio stations here in the DC metro area, and helping them figure out how to use the web, digital assets, podcast, all that fun stuff for both their programming and for revenue generation. From there, ended up becoming the managing partner of an ad agency that was called FaceTime Strategy, headquartered in DC. Was there for 2 years. We started with one office in DC, and then by the time I left, we had offices in DC, Dallas, Chicago, and New York. And then in 2009, founded my firm, originally as a single person consultancy, and now we are a full service web presence management firm.
And so now the kingdom is yours.
There you go.
So when you were with supporting the CBS radio stations and stuff, about what time was that?
That would have been in around 2006. So when I started with them.
Yeah. So that, because radio stations, I think, also were a little bit slow to catch on to the power of the web.
Very much so.
And their initial offerings were really kind of confusing and busy.
Yeah, they try to take a lot of what worked in the past or what worked in the radio room and just kind of spit it out online, not really paying attention to the fact that it's no longer just a audio medium. So there was a ton of noise. It was very, very sloppy. They didn't, I guess, because radio isn't a visual medium, there wasn't much attention paid to videos. So that was a big part of the challenge in going in there and kind of helping clean some of that stuff up.
Although I think now in particular, there's some of the best examples of the better stations are some of the best examples of how to use a website to magnify your content and maximize its distribution.
Yeah, I think radio stations were always one of the ones that had kind of the best community you know, because you could always call in and speak with the DJ. So there was always a real sense of community behind radio. And that was one of the things that social media made it easier to do. So I think as they've gotten comfortable doing that, and that was part of what we did together, is just make it easier to have that community connect, have an engaging conversation, and then you're more likely to want to listen and be engaged because those are your people.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here for the moment. So for the benefit of our audience, I've invited Chris to be on the show because I wanted to talk specifically about attorney websites and developing your web presence. And as I mentioned to you, Chris, ahead of time, you know, attorneys were also slow to the process of using websites as a means of marketing themselves to the community because of restrictions that were placed on attorneys early. So I guess the foundational question would be is, how important is it and why is it important for solo attorneys in particular to have a great web presence these days?
Yeah, so it's if you ever visit our website, the thing we have on our homepage is you are your web presence. And the reason we say that is we did a study in 2014 of it was thousands of business professionals and talked about if you got a word of mouth referral, you know, what did you do with it? Did you check something out? Did you do some research before you contacted people? What were the most important aspects? And over 9 out of 10 people would check the person's website before they decided if they were going to contact somebody or not. So all those people that said, oh, I have a word of mouth business, their website was still very, very important. And it's because it plays to the theater of the mind. Who you appear to be, and especially if your first impression with somebody, maybe a potential referral, is through your website, people have no choice but to believe you to be who you present yourself to be. And obviously, there needs to be consistency with that, but you can look really, really sophisticated and good at what you do with the web, or you can have, you know, a very old-fashioned, poor-looking website, and even if all the content is the same, it reflects differently on you.
Yeah, and I think that's where the different types of attorney websites start to differentiate themselves in the sense that, as you said, it has to be congruent with who you are. So you can't really have one of those flashy whiz-bang kind of really reach out and grab you type web presence when that's not who you are as a person. And so when the client comes to meet you and that's not who you are, who you reflected yourself to be on the website isn't who you are in person, there's a disconnect, as you said, and it creates a problem. The ones that have that congruency are the ones I think that excel.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things we see all the time is websites that are congruent and consistent with who the people are. Let's say the first impression is you go in, you have a great meeting with somebody and you think you're going to end up getting the work, and then you never hear from them again. We hear from a lot of clients that that's one of the reasons they reach out to us. And a lot of times, you know, after we've launched a new website, that stops happening. And so as you kind of work through the correlation of, okay, well, why did this happen before and it's not happening now?
Yeah, what was different?
It's simply because you may have made a great first impression, and then when they went to follow up, your website did not align with who you said you were in the meeting. And a lot of time what happens is our conversations when we're presenting ourselves, we talk about the latest and greatest things that we've done. But our website, especially if you're a solo practitioner or you're just a really busy team and you haven't had time to update it, it talks about things that are a few months or even a few years old. And so it's usually incongruent with what you might have said in a meeting. And people pick up on that. You know, if they don't feel comfortable that you are who you said you were, or you were maybe trying to flavor the conversation based on who you were in the room with, and then your website is more forthright, they tend not to follow up. And so what we find is as we help people create a consistent web presence, it generally lends itself to having more of those follow-up conversations more successfully.
Yeah, and I think in today's day and age, consumers and prospective clients bring a healthy dose of skepticism anyway when they go to visit, in particular, an attorney website. And so you're fighting an uphill battle oftentimes right from the very beginning. So that brings me to my next question, because I think particularly for solos who are working with limited finances, usually in the beginning, they have an idea that, well, I just need to get something up to have some kind of presence on the web. And so my question is a bad website better than no website at all?
Oh, that's such a relative question. It depends on your definition of bad. I will say, you know, per the conversation we just had, it's if you go into a meeting with somebody and you knock it out of the park and then they follow up and they look at your website and they think, oh, that doesn't seem like the person that was in the room with us. I would count that as bad, and that's definitely going to be working against you. And in that case, while I think most people check to have, you know, oh, somebody has a website, therefore there's some level of validity to they are who they say they are and they are the business because they spent the $8 on a domain name or whatever the case might be. It's a tricky question to answer simply because it's going to work against you, but it's probably better to at least have something than nothing, if nothing else than as a simple validation that I am who I say I am and I do what I say I do.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think we see often in the legal community is that folks go to some of these quick website development platforms, and they put up a one page or maybe two page website without their own domain name on top of it. Mm-hmm. That's really just their online resume. And I just wonder how well that works.
So it doesn't do much in terms of growing the business, for sure.
Yeah.
We've seen some firms that we've worked with that maybe they've grown from one or two person shops to, you know, they've begun to have some success. And that's mostly been through just individual hustle, and a calling card website worked for them as long as they were doing a lot of the hustle. But as they started to want to grow, it really kind of hamstrings you whenever you want to recruit anything more than maybe an assistant or a paralegal or a secretary or something. And whenever you want to start to be able to have leads or clients come to you that you aren't necessarily going out to them, sites like that aren't going to do a whole lot for you. You're going to need to really have a more sophisticated web presence to begin to actually attract new business.
So if I'm a forward-thinking attorney, and I want to have a website that works for me, what are the kinds of things that I should be expecting my website to do besides just present my curriculum vitae?
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you spent the time to think about where do I want to go as a professional, what do I want this practice to look like in the coming years, you can be much more focused and intelligent with how you spend your dollars or time on a website initially. And in some cases, it's very much okay to have, you know, essentially a CV up, knowing that, okay, hey, for a year, I'm going to have the CV up. I'm going to hustle. I'm going to do a lot of, you know, individual work. And then whenever I want to pivot over and begin to grow, we're going to change over to something else. But one of the biggest things you need to take into consideration at that point is, what do I want the website to do for me? And what do I want it to do for me in the long run? You know, in the short term, if it doesn't need to do much, it might be okay just to do something small like that CV. Whereas if you think, oh, we're very quickly going to try to grow and acquire a couple of big clients, then I'm going to leverage that into some additional opportunities, then it might make sense to invest a little bit more upfront so you don't have to rebuild or go through the, you know, a more official website design or redesign process and kind of do that while your firm is evolving and growing and everything's kind of happening at, you know, full velocity.
So kind of think about it in terms of a life cycle initially, so that you can maybe save some time and effort a little later on down the road.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen folks that have invested in building out a website for who they thought they were going to be, built that out, you know, they spend whatever they spend on it. And then a few months later, you know, get kind of another idea, realize they have some different opportunities that doesn't align with who they said they were, and they begin to change again. And we've had one organization we worked with that happened 4 times in 5 years. So you can imagine how frustrating that is.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it is just sitting down and saying, like, look, let's build for who you're becoming. And then that way, even if you change or you need to pivot, you've got something that's more flexible. And sometimes that costs more upfront, but it's going to pay dividends in the long run because you don't have to go through and blow it back up or make constant changes. You've got something that's a little bit more reliable in terms of a platform.
I think initially attorneys looked at websites as saying, okay, I'm going to put up a website and it's going to explain who the people are in my practice, in my firm, what is it that I do, and some resources that might be of use to my visitors, and kind of really left it at that. And then their view was, well, to improve it, I'm going to get better pictures or, you know, more colorful banner. But they really weren't asking their website to do more for them. Now I see with, you know, the folks who have put a lot of effort into their website, all manners of functions that the website can provide for an attorney, such as, frankly, just capturing the lead generation information, or presenting video, or involving online chat. Talk about some of those types of things and as they relate to the overall development of a website.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As you think about the way your organization is going to grow, there's a lot of different things a fully functional web presence can do for you. And I mean, we've had organizations that we work with that, like you said, I mean, they may run the gamut in terms of providing a lot of information that is really valuable for the people that they consider their key prospective clientele. Use that information to begin to build a relationship with these people. And then if and when they have the appropriate issue that they can help them with, make it very, very easy to potentially subscribe to a newsletter or to a video channel so they can stay top of mind. And then as they get closer to a position where they can actually help them or they have a need, being able to, you know, fill out a form through the website, being able to then, you know, follow up with a conversation or even begin to schedule conversations automatically. There's a lot of great tools out there like Calendly and TimeTrade that you can actually integrate with your website and your internal calendars. So there's very little friction in terms of scheduling an initial consultation and all the things that are associated with it. And then, like you mentioned, there's, you know, components like live chat. There's some organizations that will include, you know, calculators and links to various articles, studies, or downloadable materials, access to webinars, videos where they can kind of coach people through, hey, this is our process. And all those things can be set up so that somebody needs to potentially offer their email address or something in order to access some of that content. And, you know, you can begin to build a relationship with them. And that's not to say that everything should be behind like a contact wall. I think we're at a place where everyone thinks the magic key to growing their business is to get people's email list, and that's not always the case. Just being a very reliable source of useful information, even if it's free and out there, can do a lot for being able to grow the organization or grow the business itself.
Just while we're briefly on the subject, what is your view of, regarding online chat on a website?
I think it's really, really useful, especially for a population that wants to talk to people, you know, face to face or over the phone less and less. There's also a certain immediacy to it. People know they're not going to get put on hold, or they can at least do something else while they're chatting. In a world where everyone is multitasking all the time, that can be a really useful way to begin to engage with somebody. Obviously, in this industry, it is something you have to use fairly carefully because a lot of people will want to ask questions relevant to whatever their issue is.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to draw that line of, okay, look, like we can talk about what we can do for you, but we can't necessarily give you advice.
Exactly.
And, you know, kind of how you structure that.
Well, you know, I have an online chat function on my website. It annoys me a little bit, however, because every time you change a page, the chat box, you know, drops down. And I got to say, no, I don't want to talk right now. You know, so maybe that's just, I need to resolve that with my provider. But
yeah, and that's those are elements that you can change in configuration. So there's a lot of different ways to have chat behave, especially if somebody's still navigating your site so that it's not disappearing or, you know, minimizing every time they go to a different page. It's just a matter of, you know, how it's configured and how it's set up.
How important is it as a owner to be able to update the website myself as opposed to having to go through somebody else to create some content update?
Yeah, I'm biased on this, but I think it's vital that every organization be able to at least have the capability to update the content in their website on their own. First, because it's not particularly complicated to do that anymore. There's a myriad of content management systems that make it really easy to change and manipulate content with a very minimal learning curve. You know, even as little as 10 to 15 minutes can get you to do a lot of the basic stuff you might need to do. And the reason I'm such a big proponent of that is because, and maybe you're aware of, you know, there was a time, especially in the early 2000s, where every single web designer and design agency had their own proprietary CMS.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe you could make some basic updates to it, But most often you had to ask them for help, and it was a recurring revenue stream for them. And then if you ever wanted to leave or move to a different platform, oh, well, you can leave whenever you want, but all your content, that belongs to us.
Right.
So you're going to have to, you know, either copy and paste that by hand or write it all anew. So it's really painful to leave. Whereas if you know how to access your site and you can manipulate the content on your own, you're not beholden to anybody. And I'll take that a step further. That's another reason I'm a big proponent of open source software, because not only can you then access your content and edit it, if you end up not liking the firm that you're working with, or something changes, or maybe you're in a little bit of a crunch and that's an expense that you can cut, whatever the case might be, it gives you the most amount of freedom in terms of options you have to just take your ball and go home, do it yourself. Or when things are really busy and you don't, it's not worth it, you're not going to generate a return by doing it yourself, you have that overflow valve to work with a partner or work with a freelancer or work with, you know, maybe one of your internal team members to be able to update that content. But you can have whoever does it basically be an outlet valve for whenever you're really busy, and whenever you're not, you know, you have the ability to do it yourself and minimize some cost.
So does that argue for something like using WordPress as the basis of the platform?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of WordPress, depending on what you want to accomplish. I think for a lot of, especially like smaller firms, WordPress is a great choice because it's very good for non-technical people.
Right.
We've trained a lot of people to use that. It's very easy to kind of get up and running and understand how to edit content. And, you know, as I said earlier, it's open source. Some of the other open source content management systems that are fairly popular, like Joomla and Drupal, those are usually more accessible to a larger team that might have a developer in-house. And that person can make some of the more sophisticated updates and everything. And then there's still a content layer. But for most smaller firms, it's going to be overkill and probably more expensive than, you know, something like a WordPress or even some of the self-service CMSs that are out there.
And that's going to take me to my next question. What about these sites like, is it Wix and Squarespace?
Wix, Weebly, Squarespace. Whenever you're first getting started, those can be really, really useful tools. They all are kind of based off templates, which is nice because it's probably going to look much more sophisticated than anything someone who's not a designer could do on their own, especially that quickly. And so it's a good chance to get your content out there, make it look pretty good. At a certain point, you know, it may begin to be limiting to be working with a template, but that's usually a concern a few years later, not necessarily something you're going to run into immediately unless you have some really special or specific need. And, you know, those tools are, again, pretty easy to learn how to use. They are proprietary, so at a certain point, you kind of get, it's possible to get stuck on those systems, and moving content can sometimes be a pain. But if you've
got
five or a 10-page website, that's not too difficult to just go ahead and copy and paste out, so it's not really anything worth worrying about that point. But if you were getting to the point where you had tons and tons of pages, then sometimes it's something to think twice about. But I love those platforms. I think they're a great way to get started.
Yeah, I know my daughter has developed her professional site on Wix and really has been able to do a lot with it. So it is a viable alternative, but I'd rather have an expert like yourself helping me because I'll have, you know, additional questions like what I was going to ask you about next about content. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work you have to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that strengthens your practice and can save you hours each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and more cases without adding stress or chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. No more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. And Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone on your team is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Getting a new website design can be a real pain point for attorneys. You're busy practicing law and running your firm, and the last thing you can afford is to waste time dealing with an incompetent design team that doesn't understand what you're trying to accomplish. So if you've been putting off that new website for your law firm, I get it. But what if I told you that getting a new website created for your law firm doesn't have to suck? My friends at Spotlight Branding pride themselves on their responsiveness, on great communication, and on delivering results for their clients. And unlike many law firm marketing companies out there, Spotlight Branding doesn't lock their clients into long-term contracts. In fact, they offer a no-risk, money-back guarantee on their work so you can have total peace of mind while you work with them. I trust the team at Spotlight Branding, as you know, to build and manage my website, as well as manage my social media strategy, my monthly email newsletter, and a whole lot more. I recommend them to solo and small firm attorneys every chance that I get. They're currently offering a special gift for our listeners, so visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE to learn more. Brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. We had Marcus Sheridan on the program, who I know you know, a while back, talking about content marketing. And so it's very important for search engine optimizations and ranking results. What's the best way to get fresh content on my website without having to spend a lot of, you know, money or time doing so?
I mean, there's a ton of options. I'm sure Marcus shared some great ones. But, you know, there's some really simple methods that we can use, and anybody can use these. There's simply speaking. You know, most lawyers are pretty comfortable being able to speak. It's kind of part of what they have to do for a living. So, you know, in the commute in and out of the office each day, or, you know, once a week, or whatever the case might be, being able to call in and speak to somebody who can do some transcription, or simply recording it and sending it to somebody to do transcription, is a great way to get additional written articles. We do a lot of work with our clients where we'll do the research to kind of figure out what 50 key questions do we want to answer, and then actually videotape, you know, our clients answering all of those questions, take that video, transcribe it, write an article based on it, and then you've got a video and an article that are both posted simultaneously to your website, and you can take one day a quarter and have 20 to 50 videos shot, depending on, you know, how comfortable you are in front of a camera and how quickly you can get through things. And while a lot of people tire of having to set aside, like, oh, I've got to set aside 2 hours this week to write our new article or whatever the case might be, most people can spare a day in their calendar, a quarter or a year, to create content in bulk and then have some other people release it for them on an ongoing basis. And so those are two strategies that work really, really well. And especially as I imagine Mark has talked about this quite a bit, video becoming more and more important, especially, you know, in the more professional side of the world.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about video. That seems to be, particularly in the legal market, that seems to be really gaining traction now.
Absolutely. I mean, you see there, I mean, there's a couple of, what's it, H3H3 is a pretty popular YouTube channel that's, you know, I believe it's either founded by or has been one of the personalities as a lawyer and actually gained a lot of traction there. It's an area where there is a wealth of confusion. Not a lot of people understand the law very well. And so to be able to be one of the voices that provides some clarity and answers some questions is fantastic, especially in a space where not a lot of people are doing it. But the other advantage there is that you can begin to create an asymmetrical relationship with a potential audience there. So, you know, they're seeing your face, they're hearing your voice. And anyone who's, you know, taken intro to psychology knows that simply seeing your face and hearing your voice make somebody have a little bit more affinity for you than somebody else. Maybe they're just reading the article. And so all other things being equal, it gives you a chance to potentially, you know, win new fans, audience, work, clientele, whatever the case might be that your competitors might not be doing.
Yeah, I'm behind on that. It's been on my task list for a while to do now is to add more video or add some video to my website. So I'm going to have to star that on my task list now. go around.
Oh, and it's something that a lot of people, they feel like it has to be like a big production, especially when you're a professional. You're like, everything I do should look very professional and produced and polished. And the fact of the matter is, the more you look online, and actually in our own research, we've done some A/B testing with some of our clients around video, and especially whenever you're doing it for like lead generation purposes, not necessarily just getting views, The higher produced, more polished videos actually converted at a lower level than the more authentic, less produced videos.
Is that right?
Where we had some that were actually just shot literally on a cell phone, on a tripod. You know, somebody had a couple hours in the afternoon to shoot the videos they missed and send it over to us, and they did phenomenally. So it's not something that you have to fear. It's more or less just if you can kind of, you know, take a breath, jump in front, do it, and just kind of start getting it done. Even if it's not something you post, it's something you're going to get more comfortable with the more that you do it. And it doesn't have to take long.
Well, if I've added video to my website and I've worked on getting it to be as attractive and as informative as possible, how do I go about, you know, capturing information about who's visiting my website and what they're doing while they're there, and how, and what should I be concentrating on based on their behavior?
Yeah. So this is something that there's a lot of confusion about, even in our industry. And there's a number, you know, people will say, oh, you need to get better analytics. And that can be where the confusion starts, because there are different types of analytics. You've got a lot of people are familiar, at least by name, with Google Analytics, which is a great, I call aggregate analytic platform, which means it does a good job of showing you that, oh, you had 10,000 visitors to your site this week, and 1,000 of them did this, and 100 of them did that. And it shows you what people are doing in aggregate, which is nice to know, but it doesn't necessarily help you or help your business.
It didn't help me focus my attention on what I needed to do to improve their experience. It just told me where they'd been.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that can be useful to know, like, oh, this article seems to be attracting people to my site, but that's about it. When you want to dive in deeper, we recommend something that we kind of put under the category of individualized analytic platforms. And this can be, they're most often tied in with marketing automation platforms, but there's HubSpot, Pardot, Infusionsoft, Entreport, Marketo, Eloqua, et cetera, Hatchbuck, SharpSpring. There's dozens and dozens of them out there now. But what they'll allow you to do is, as soon as somebody converts in some manner on your website, they give their email address to subscribe to a newsletter or a podcast, they provide an email address or a name to download a resource off of your website or to access a webinar, whatever the case might be, they fill out a contact form to get, you know, to know you.
Some type of interaction with your site.
Exactly. Any kind of interaction where information is exchanged.
Uh-huh.
You can now look backwards at, you know, okay, Frank reached out to us. He wants to set up a consultation next week. And now we can already take a look back, because he's given us some information. These pieces of software will know, you know, where he came from, what page he landed on, how long he spent on each of these pages. And now you can begin to, one, make more effective use of the call with Frank, because you'll see, like, oh, he spent a lot of time on this section of our website around these, you know, issues. So let's make sure we talk about that whenever he comes in, because that's clearly what he's, you know, contacting us about. But more importantly, the second thing it allows you to do is to model your actual behavior and content off of what generates result for the business. And so the difference you often see is, sometimes you'll see in Google Analytics an article that gets you thousands and thousands of new visitors every week. And you may find there's another article that only gets you a few hundred, but that article that gets you a few hundred is the one that brings in one or two new clients each week. And so at the end of the day, if you hadn't had the benefit of that individualized analytic platform, you might think, like, oh, this one that's getting us 10,000 views is the one we have to focus on. So we need to make more content like that. But the fact of that is, maybe it's just a bunch of, you know, college students who are resource or using that as a resource for a paper or something they're writing. Whereas the other one, you know, there is less of a demand for it in terms of the content, but it is more in demand by the type of people that you can actually work with, and to actually going to have an impact to your business.
Well, that is a very important distinction. And, you know, the other thing that I think knowing that kind of information will allow you to do is to make sure that wherever your visitor is most ready to engage you, there's a methodology for them to do that. Right there. They don't have to go to a separate page or a separate place on your website. If they're motivated at that point, have a capture form right then and there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a story a mentor of mine, Jim Weisskopf, used to tell me, which was, I'm a little young to know that there was a time when there were, like door-to-door vacuum salesmen.
Yeah.
And so he said, you know, if let's say this door-to-door vacuum salesman comes to your house, and he's showing you the vacuum, and, you know, 15 minutes in, you're like, this is the best vacuum in the world. I want to buy it right now. And you tell the guy, hey, you're done. I've signed up. I'm sold. I want to give you some money for that vacuum. He wouldn't then tell you, well, no. I've got 30 more minutes left in my pitch, so let me go ahead and wrap this up.
Yeah.
You'd never do that in person, but so many people treat their website that way, where they're like, well, let's just wait till you get to the page on which you're supposed to convert. So if you really like what you've seen here, click here, and then click here, and then go to our contact page, or then click at this form. The fact of the matter is, when someone's ready to contact you, yeah, have the contact button there.
Yeah, I'm done by that point.
Yeah, a lot of other people are as well.
So is it possible to have a website that is both useful to my visitors, ranks well in search results, and actually generates business for me? I mean, I think it sounds like a self-evident question, but I think a lot of times we as attorneys think, well, I'm going to be able to do one of those things and hope that the other two happen as a result of it.
No, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you have one that's, if your primary focus is to be of service to your visitors and not necessarily just grabbing at, you know, new business, we find there's often alignment with, hey, you're trying to provide useful information. You're doing it in service of others. Google, I take this from Marcus, so if he shared it, I apologize for being repetitive, but Google's goal is to do its best job by its client, which is the person doing the search. So it wants to be able to show the information that's most relevant to whatever you searched. And if you're the one that provides that information in service of that audience, Google, built into its business model, its best bet is to show your content first, and which means you're going to be the first one they see, you're going to be the first one they click on, and the overall impact to your business generally follows from there. You know, there's a lot of sophistication, and obviously it's more detailed than that to figure out what content is most appropriate to create and how you create it and, you know, what you do from there. But quite frankly, we've seen a lot of people that just jump in and their main goal is, I feel like this is information that needs to be out there and it can help people. And, you know, just that intention carries a lot of heft behind it, because they tend to do a good, thorough job in creating useful content. And that goes a long way.
Well, for me, it gives me a platform to yak. So I publish, you know, blog articles and try and change the content as much as I can, just to keep it fresh and keep people engaged when they do come to the website. Kind of wrapping this up here, Chris, I guess now more than ever, your website doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists within the whole internet sphere of social media. Talk a little bit about how social media works with your website and how it works together to help grow your business.
Yes. I mean, social media, you know, it's part of a web presence. And so much like the website, in some cases, you just need to make sure that you're there and people, again, know you are there and you do what you do. In a lot of cases, we see some people treat social media kind of like what we call a shiny object syndrome, which is they think, oh, I need to be killing it on my website. I need to be killing it with SEO. I need to be killing it with social media. And they begin to get very distracted trying to do all the things in all of the spaces. In the, you know, world of web presence, you focus on the elements that get you results. And so in those cases, if you're going to be using your social media, we, from my, you know, experience in working in the legal profession, we've seen LinkedIn tends to do very well, especially if it's like B2B legal, B2C legal. We've seen some people be very, very successful, you know, using Facebook. Some of those people that want to be kind of considered like thought leaders or participate in those like ongoing, you know, hashtag chats on Twitter and stuff like that can be a very effective way to create a, you know, web presence, to create a name, to create some name recognition, and some authority, you know, for the topics that you're an expert at. And then, you know, of course, it needs to parlay. Most people, if they've seen you in social media, are then going to check out your website. Going back to that study we did in 2014, that's usually the second point of reference based on any point somebody meets somebody at. So whether it's a word of mouth referral or you connect on LinkedIn or they see you on Twitter, whatever, they generally go to check out your website. So it makes sense to have, again, at least a foundation there before you, you know, start killing it one place or the other. But if you decide, hey, I'm going to make social media the place that I'm known and this is going to be my space and you go all out with it, you can do that very, very effectively and, you know, make that your primary focus. There's a lot of different ways to use these tools. It's just, I don't want people to get overwhelmed feeling like they need to use all of these tools, because then you just end up, you know, the what's the old adage, he who chases two rabbits catches neither. It's, you know, that all over. And it's just in today's world, I think every single client we speak with feels like, oh, well, we need, what are we doing with this? What are we doing with that? We've talked to some B2B brands that are talking about, like, what are we doing with Snapchat? Well, why do you think your clients want you to be on Snapchat? In some cases, you just need to have the realization that that's not going to generate a return. And while there might be a lot of hype around it, or it might be a lot of fun, it's not always the area, you know, you need to focus on.
It's just as an aside, is Snapchat going away given Facebook Live?
You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do to kind of try to save face. Because I think, you know, Facebook Live took some of it, but the Instagram stories that were basically copied directly from Snapchat, I'm sure, you could look at reports, it's definitely taken a big step or a big bite out of them.
But I don't like the silly logo.
It is intended for a different audience.
It's weird. Sure. So anyway, that's just my bias. All right, I'm just going to wrap up here, Chris. How important is mobile these days? Is mobile the tail wagging the dog?
No, at this point, I mean, mobile, it's pretty much, if at this point you're thinking about like, hey, we want to do a redesign, it's most likely you need to be either focused primarily on mobile, or it needs to at least be considered heavily through, you know, what most people consider a responsive design. Rather than a separate mobile site, that's most of those are in the past, although there's still a few areas where it's definitely appropriate to have a separate mobile site. But in our industry, the legal industry, that is, it's going to be really important, because obviously most people are checking their emails on their phone. And so if it's, hey, I want you to meet X, Y, and Z, you know, this guy's helped me, I think he can help you. Being able to have your site get pulled up on a phone and still make a good impression is going to be really, really important, especially for an audience more on the run. And it's only going to continue to become more important. So if you ignore it at this point, it's just putting you further and further behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I mean, I know in the same way that, and I'll say this because I'm really old, most younger attorneys and younger people that I know, none of them have landlines. The only thing they have is their cell phone, their mobile line. In the same way, I'm seeing more and more people now who do not have a desktop or laptop computer. They're going exclusively with their smartphone and tablet.
You can do a ton from those platforms now. I mean, even the people we work with that manage their sites, manage them from, you know, maybe a live event, whereas they used to have to take a laptop and, you know, try to make sure that they were, like, if they were going to be live tweeting or live blogging the event, they'd have to have the laptop there and type it up. But now people are doing all of that from their phones.
So ignoring mobile, you do so at your peril.
Oh, absolutely.
Great. Well, Chris, I don't think we talked about your company specifically, but so in closing, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about your company? I don't think we even mentioned the name, and what you do and how folks can get a hold of you if they want to follow up and maybe engage your services.
Sure. So the company itself is called Yoko Co. That's YOKOCO.com. And Neil, as you know, we work exclusively with organizations that are focused on building a better world and have a purpose beyond just profit. So that includes a lot of, you know, socially conscious commercial organizations, be they large or small, as well as associations and nonprofits. And obviously you can find us there at yokoco.com. And you can kind of see a little bit of what we've done and who we do it for. And of course, if you've got questions or follow-up questions, you know, this podcast, you can clearly contact us or contact Neil. And if there's enough that warrants a follow-up or any kind of addendum, happy to do that too.
Great. Well, I don't think we touched upon that enough either. You know, that your company and you in particular do a great deal for socially conscious causes and, you know, giving back to you know, the community and the world. And it's a very admirable quality. And so, you know, it makes it easy to do business with guys like you because you have a larger purpose and a more humane purpose in life than just, you know, making money. I mean, we all want to make money. That's great. But if you can improve the world in doing so, we're all better off for it. And I mean, I love companies like yours and folks like you who do that. So congratulations. I really, really find that to be inspiring. But anyway, Chris, it's been a delight having you on The Law Entrepreneur. And I want to thank you again for your time. And I wish everything, all the best for you. And we'll catch up with you a little further on down the road.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it will do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.